head into any grocery store today and you'll definitely notice a growing trend. There are more products than ever on store shelves with the words gluten-free on the box.
Gluten-free food is no longer just for people with celiac disease. More and more people are making the conscious decision to cut gluten out of their diets, labeling it as public enemy number one when it comes to nutritional health.
Here with us now to separate fact from fiction in the gluten debate is Stephen Yaffa. He's the author of Grain of Truth, The Real Case For and Against Wheat and Gluten. Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure.
Well, let's back up for a sec. A few years back, the section of the store with gluten-free products was maybe a tiny little area in the back. Maybe it didn't exist at all, depending on where you are. Now they're all over the place. A lot of restaurants offering gluten-free alternatives front and center. You say at no time in our history has a major food staple endured such widespread public distrust as wheat. So how do we get here?
You know, we got here through a combination of things that are understood and the mysteries that always surround a fad. You know, it goes viral in some ways, and next thing you know, it's spreading in all directions. This one got here for a combination of celebrities bolstering it, like Gwyneth Paltrow, with sports figures sort of kicking in, and a few others as well. And it really sort of came out of the Atkins low-carb diet of the 80s and 90s and mushroomed into something somewhat related to it, which is obviously the carbs that are in white flour, and then more specifically gluten, which are a combination of two proteins in the white flour, the interior of the seed, which gives us the white flour. So there's no simple, easy answer, but once it caught on, it sort of crossed the boundaries from being about possibly issues having to do with digestion to kind of becoming now a kind of a social cachet for being attending to your health and feeling in some ways perhaps you might even be somewhat superior to somebody who isn't paying as much attention to being gluten-free as you are. So it's hard to tell, you know, where it's going to go, but those are kind of the ingredients that led to where we are now.
And how much of an economic powerhouse is gluten-free right now, ballpark?
Good question. It's estimated to be $16 billion a year.
All right. Well, I want to listen to a clip from the movie This Is the End. Seth Rogen, playing himself, is explaining why he's gone gluten-free but isn't quite clear on what gluten is.
Great.
Gluten's a vague term. It's something that's used to categorize things that are bad. You know, calories, that's a gluten. Fat, that's a gluten.
Somebody just told you you probably shouldn't eat gluten. You're like, oh, I guess I shouldn't eat gluten.
So you started to touch on it there, Stephen. What exactly is gluten? What does it do in our bread and in our diet?
I'll tell you exactly what it does. And by the way, Seth's not alone. Most people who turn out to be staying off gluten really don't know what it is. It's actually protein. It has nothing at all to do with most things that immediately create a wheat belly at all. It's really what gives the bread its dome shape when it rises in the oven, because one of the proteins creates kind of an elastic quality, the other is extensible, and the final result of that is that you get air bubbles that are trapped in bread, escaping carbon dioxide, and those are the air bubbles in the bread that create the rise.
So it's what makes bread bready and fluffy. And
exactly. When you make bread out of things that are not wheat, that don't have gluten in them, you don't get those results. So really nobody's come along with any kind of substitute in terms of the crunchy, wonderful, delicious, chewy qualities in wheat bread that that really satisfy those particular characteristics.
Now, the concern over gluten, some people have celiac disease, which is bad, and they should, I think everybody agrees on this one, avoid gluten. But there's a lot of other people who have or think they have gluten sensitivity, and that's more of a gray area. Can you talk about this idea of gluten sensitivity?
Yes, it is a gray area, and in fact, after all of the stuff that's gone on, it still remains quite mysterious, really, in terms of being, the stuff that you can easily diagnose medically. You can't go in and get a blood test for it, for example. You might you know, see slight elevation in some of the biomarkers, but really it's still unknown. Essentially, gluten sensitivity really sort of taps into areas that are somewhat related to celiac disease, but not the severe autoimmune reaction that gluten can cause. It basically, when people have a problem with it, one way or another, it's usually because of the inflammatory nature of those proteins as they get into the bloodstream, and they can cause joint aches, fatigue, and bloating, which are the three most common, really the most common aspects that people relate to being gluten-free. And one of the complications is that bloating in particular may have nothing at all to do with gluten. There are potentially carbs that don't completely ferment in your small intestine, and when they start to ferment in your large intestine, they cause issues that maybe people think of as being related to gluten, but they're not.
Talking to Stephen Yaffa, author of the book Grain of Truth, The Real Case For and Against Wheat and Gluten. And Stephen, on that point, I think there are a lot of people out there, we'll probably hear from some of them when we invite calls in a little bit at 800-642-1234, who'll say, I don't have celiac, I wasn't diagnosed with it, but I gave up gluten and I feel better in a lot of ways. So is this just placebo effect, or is there maybe a side benefit that isn't about the gluten?
I think, and of course I've heard this a lot in the 2 years that I've been doing this book, as you might imagine, and I would never, you know, dispute that at all. But yes, gluten often is really not the culprit here. What happens is if you give up gluten, and I'm sure a lot of these people know this from their personal experience, you have to give up a lot of processed foods that you are eating, foods with white, refined white flour in them. You know, I have major issues to take up with the authors of Wheat Belly and Grain Brain, because they're really not telling us the whole story. But I certainly agree with them in terms of the damage that can be done by pure carbohydrates that are shooting right into your bloodstream. So if you're giving up that, you know, and you're giving up other processed foods that may have gluten in it, you're doing yourself a lot of good by eating real foods instead. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And really, you know, I'm not the final judge here. The doctors in this country who are the leaders of this in the celiac realm, the first thing they say is essentially their version of what I just said, which is that you can't really go gluten-free without reverting in a good way to eating real foods.
But you're making the case that we can eat real foods without going gluten-free, and I want to pursue that point a little. You talk about how we make a lot of our bread in this country. We really beat the heck out of our wheat or other grains in doing it. We lose a lot of the benefit of it. So what's wrong, as you see it, with the way we make a lot of our bread in this country?
Good question. We do beat the heck out of it. What we do is short ferment it, and that means from beginning to end in an industrial baker, you're going from dough through bread through shipping it out the door. So that 4 hour short fermentation does nothing at all to reduce the potential toxicity of the gluten molecules. But if you're doing it in what's considered to be the real way, meaning the natural way, over 2 days, long fermentation or sometimes called slow rise, you wind up with sourdough breads that may be tangy or may not be, depending on how much acetic acid they have in them, but they all have lactic acid, and that's extremely good for your probiotics in your gut, and it really cuts through these bulky gluten molecules that look like tangled fishing lines. When you chop them up, they are much easier, chemically that is, of course, through long fermentation, they're much easier to digest. And an awful lot of people who think they're gluten sensitive find them, to their surprise, that they can eat sourdough breads without any problem.
I want to read a comment from Meredith on Facebook. Meredith writes, I've been gluten-free for 10 years due to gluten intolerance. So for me, gluten is the enemy. Now, due to all the hype surrounding being gluten-free, I'm embarrassed to even admit to anyone that I'm gluten-free due to them right away jumping to the assumption that I'm riding the gluten-free bandwagon. So there is kind of a gluten-free bandwagon. Are a lot of people, you think, Stephen, going gluten-free who just really don't need to?
The best estimate from clinical research with, you know, checking out, I think, 4,000 patients, I mean, a lot of people, is that about 6% of them have symptoms that may be related to gluten sensitivity. On the other hand, 35% of the people in this country, close to 35%, think that they have something that issues with gluten that really is causing them to cut back on their use or to stop using gluten entirely. So there's a huge disproportionate amount of people who are relating their issues to gluten compared to people who really seem to have potentially any kind of issue.
We're talking right now with author Stephen Yaffa. He's presenting the case for and against gluten. His new book is called Grain of Truth. You can join the conversation with your thoughts, your experiences as well, at 800-642-1234.
Did you make the choice to go gluten-free? And if so, why? And have you noticed a difference in your health? If you're a wheat eater, do all these claims against gluten bother you? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking right now with Stephen Yaffa. He's the author of the book Grain of Truth, The Real Case for and Against Wheat and Gluten. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the growing gluten-free trend? Have you embraced it, tried it, been puzzled by it? And what questions do you have about gluten and wheat? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll bring Stephen Yaffa back up in just a few minutes. Coming up after 5, we'll look at President Obama's announcement today banning the use of certain military-style equipment, the sale of military-style equipment to local police departments. That's coming up after 5, after the news. Bringing Stephen Yaffa back on the line with us. Lost him there for a sec. Stephen, do we have you back with us?
We do indeed.
Okay, we're going to go to our callers now, Stephen. We've got Corey on the line in Platteville. Corey, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to thank Stephen very much for writing this book. My wife and her entire family, her grandfather was diagnosed with celiac about 8 or 10 years ago. And overall, for us, it made it really difficult. My wife, growing up, was anemic, and she had a lot of migraines and had a lot of horrible health issues. And when they finally diagnosed her grandfather, she thought, oh, maybe it'll work for me. And it worked great for her. She has no migraines anymore. She's in much better health. But the only way to test for, or one of the ways to test for celiac disease is for them to actually give you a lot of wheat. And, you know, her idea is, why would I want to do that? Because I feel crummy after I do so.
So, Corey, she hasn't been, I just want to double check, she has or hasn't been diagnosed with celiac?
She has not. She has not, because the way to test it is to give a lot of, you know, give them a lot of wheat and then test it.
Corey?
Well, just let me jump in for a second. If she were being tested for celiac disease, I mean, you may know this already, so stop me. You know, that's an inherited disease that has biomarkers on the genes, and that can be tested with a, you know, painlessly with a simple blood test these days.
Oh, so that's a thought for your wife, Corey. Well, good luck to you and to her. Is it, you just said, Stephen, it is inherited or it can be celiac disease?
No, it is inherited. And not everybody who has that particular genetic disposition necessarily gets celiac disease, but there's definitely a propensity toward celiac disease if you have that genetic biomarker.
And Stephen, as you're raising concerns about too many people maybe going gluten-free, you still, people who have celiac, you're hoping will be diagnosed and can behave accordingly, right?
Oh, absolutely. And everything that has to do with celiac disease really does not apply to gluten sensitivity and vice versa in terms of being diagnosed, because you really cannot eat wheat in any form whatsoever if you have celiac disease without initiating an autoimmune reaction, which is really severe. It's really the body attacking itself.
Corey, thanks a lot for the call. Good luck to your wife. Before we go back to callers, Stephen, one thing you point out in your book is that gluten-free has taken on almost evangelical tones among some of its proponents and practitioners. Can you speak to that a little?
I can, for sure. You know, there's a kind of I call it almost a kind of a quasi-religious belief that attaches itself to some fads, and this one for sure, which is essentially that, if we just sort of give give our belief to one thing or one person or whatever it might be who's going to solve a lot of our problems for us, it kind of alleviates some of the anxiety that goes about having to, you know, thread through life and keep making complicated decisions about complicated things. So the nature of this fad, to some degree, taps right into that kind of a true believer syndrome. And I don't attach it necessarily to religion, but I think it stems from a lot of the same impulses that are part of us, you know, just as human nature. It's kind of like the one-stop, one-shop thing that's going to cure us, you know, quickly, and that will solve problems for us without, a lot more invested in trying to figure things out. And it certainly started that way, wheat that is, because Sylvester Graham, who was a reverend, was really the first guy in the 1830s to insist that people eat only whole wheat. And his name, of course, now attaches itself to the Graham cracker. And by the way, the Graham crackers we now eat are nothing like the Graham crackers that Sylvester made back then. They were like a hardtack. They were brittle. They were 100% whole wheat and probably pretty much impossible to get down. But he insisted that they would stop anybody from having any kind of beliefs that related to sexual arousal, which was very important for him because religion and sexuality were really at different ends of the pole as far as he was concerned. They were, you know, one did not... one could not exist with the other.
We're talking about wheat and gluten with Stephen Yaffa, author of the book Grain of Truth. We heard from Peter on Facebook who writes, an argument in favor of going gluten-free is that in order to do so, you pretty much have to stop eating processed foods. Start eating lots of fresh and homemade foods. Gluten-free eliminates many unhealthy foods. Stephen, that's definitely something you're saying in your book, but you also say we can do those things without giving up the gluten.
Yes, I think we can. And I'm not giving medical advice, and everybody's system is really unique, which is one of the issues I have with blanket statements made by William Davis in Wheat Belly, for example, that wheat has killed more people on Earth than all wars combined. My theory about it is very much like the person on Facebook who wrote in, which essentially is if we give up, eating gluten free things that are gluten things that are bad for us and check out real foods made with gluten, I think we're probably on the road to really having a good diet if our systems can handle it. And I think sourdough, to repeat myself briefly, is a way of dealing with gluten and making it compatible with the way that most of us are built. And the only way to find out is to buy an artisanal loaf of whole wheat sourdough, take a little bit of it if you think you might have gluten issues, and see how your system reacts to it.
As we see more gluten-free products, are these products just gluten-free, not necessarily any healthier or less processed? Are we kind of sidestepping the problem?
I think they're not only equally as bad for us. I think in many cases they're worse because they have, if you look on the ingredients, you're going to find potato flour, rice flour, tapioca flour, and so forth. This is a lot of empty carbo stuff that really is dreadful. It does nothing for us nutritionally, which is what whole wheat does. 100% whole wheat is very, very healthy. And one of the benefits is fiber. And none of those gluten-free products that I know about really substitutes fairly for the things you miss when you're not eating 100% whole wheat.
Go back to our callers. You've got Terry on the line in Waupaca. Terry, hi.
Hi. I love hearing what your guest has to say. I went gluten-free a year ago, but I did it because I have an autoimmune disease. I do not have celiac. I have Hashimoto's, which is Hashimoto's thyroid. But I found that by going gluten-free, but I didn't go with the gluten-free products. I just dropped processed foods, basically, but gluten-free was a big part of it. And I had lost weight, and I'm also on the road to putting my autoimmune disease in remission. The antibodies that define my disease are steadily decreasing. They were over 500 before I started. They're now under 60.
All right, Terry, good luck. I hope the trend continues there. Stephen, are there cases of other non-celiac autoimmune disease where gluten-free might make sense?
By far, as your caller just mentioned, thyroid is by far the most common of the other diseases, and really the only one that seems to come up a lot when people are talking about other diseases other than celiac disease that gluten might affect.
So, Stephen, in our last couple of minutes, let's talk about the alternative to an increasingly gluten-free world. You look at, and you've touched on here today, artisan breads as alternatives, better processes, that sort of thing. What would a happy wheat-positive world look like for us?
A wheat-positive, good question. A wheat-positive world would look like a world in which people are enjoying eating whole wheat without thinking that it tastes like roofing material. Because, as Robin Williams, to quote the late Robin Williams, because a lot of people when they grew up, including myself to some degree, always associated whole wheat with something that was good for us but really tasted lousy. And what's happened is that it's 100% whole wheat has really sort of had a renovation. It's being now made by really good bakers, including some smaller industrial bakers who are turning out good 100% whole wheat pasta and so forth, things that really didn't register at all in the Epicurean scale in the past. So I would urge your listeners to check things out. Whole Foods makes its own private label whole wheat pastas now, and I think you find them interesting. There are companies like Community Grains, by the way, all listed as resources in the back of my book, along with a homemade sourdough recipe for the bread that I've been making now for 2 years, which for some bizarre reason has led to about 10 pounds of weight loss for me and about 5 pounds for my wife.
Wow.
So it's gone in the opposite direction from what people might think. I think you really don't want to give up whole wheat, you know, in your diet unless you can find a substitute that really fulfills the same, you know, nutritive agenda. So I would, not try to toss it out because there's really nothing else I don't think that substitutes for it clearly. And it's something to keep in mind, of course, is that we've been eating wheat for over 10,000 years, and we've evolved pretty well.
Stephen, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
That was Stephen Yaffa, author of Grain of Truth, The Real Case for and Against Wheat and Gluten.